This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
It is time for the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, online at WTK.com. Good morning, Craig Ross. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Ira. How are you?
Doing really well. Brian, good morning.
Hello.
Craig's dressed to be back in Hawaii right now.
Yeah, I am.
Nice Hawaiian shirt going on there.
Yeah, the weather's beautiful here. While we were off air for a minute, Ira was complaining that this hour lacks culture.
I was not complaining
about it.
I was not complaining. This hour has plenty of culture.
And so,
we want more culture.
We've talked about dead communist martyrs and how they connect to Michigan football.
Or don't.
And we've talked about deposed Lamarckian geneticists, Tofram Lysenko, and their journeys to Lubyanka and Siberia.
You just lost a lot of people.
And how that connects. But this has come up on the show.
I know it has.
And what a Lamarckian geneticist is, though. That's good.
And so I was thinking, Chinese revolutionary poetry by Ken Smith, who is a now deceased the poet laureate of Great Britain. And he had a line about, I cut my hands on the cords of the strangling post, but no blood spilled from my veins. Instead of blood, I watched and saw the pity flow out of me. But I thought, no, I'm not gonna do that poem. I'm gonna do something in honor of Sam. We all love Sam.
That's hardcore.
And
that's some deep stuff.
And this is for Sam. I would liken you to a night without stars, were it not for your eyes. I would liken you to a sleep without dreams, were it not for your songs. That's Langston Hughes, and that's in honor of him and his family,
Noah Langston Webb. There you go.
So we've brought...
1 week old today, by the way.
This may be the first sports talk show that started with poetry.
I think
we are bringing... And I hearken everyone to buy their tickets now for the La Boheme in November 6th and 7th at the greatest all-time opera being performed by the best musical enterprise ever, the University of Michigan School of Music.
They have a great theater department. I'm going to actually venture a guess and say that Baltimore Sports Radio, at some point in time, somebody quoted the Raven to open a show. Maybe some poetry there. That's off the top of my head. There may be others, but here we do like to bring culture to the table.
There is someone in their car right now
who's driven off the road. And said,
hopefully
that man
not that.
Is imbecile.
His wife listens to NPR, and he doesn't listen to NPR. He listens to Sports Talk 1050, and he's been swapping between the two, thinking they're both NPR for the last 10 minutes. He's very upset.
I'm sorry.
This is not NPR. This is the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. As we are now almost a full week into fall camp, they have 5 practices under their belt. Heard from the coordinators yesterday, Josh Gattis and Dom Brown. And we talked a lot about what Dom Brown had to say. Actually, didn't get a whole lot into what Josh Gattis had to say, so we can do that a little bit here this morning as well. But when Dom Brown spoke yesterday, I mean, he doesn't really hold punches back. Like, he talks. He gives you information. He talked about the beginning of the Notre Dame game, the end of the Ohio State game, and squeezing that out and taking that next step with the defense, which I'm sure was a nice thing for fans to hear. Of course, now the next part is to implement it. He talked about being ready with some more, I'm paraphrasing, but some more shots in the arsenal when they need to make some adjustments on the fly. So we did get into that as well, which I think is an important thing in certain games, especially when you get later in the year. That's important. And then, but he started out talking about commenting, I guess it was on the heels of a Jim Harbaugh comment about the speed at defensive line. Michigan could go 10 deep along the defensive front. That would be that's a lot of guys.
I've got 7 I like.
So it starts with the ends. Aiden Hutchinson, Mike Dana, and Quiddy Pay. I think we're all in agreement those three guys are all players.
To some Uche is a rush end, right?
So he's a rush end and a Sam linebacker. So
we would count Uche.
So you can count, he mentioned him in there
there
as a rush guy. So he's a hybrid. He will play some rush end. So you could put him in there. He's not an every down end, but he's a rush end. The question marks that we had, and we talked about it last week, were the inside. But glowing review of the progress made by Carlo Kemp. That seems important.
That would be important. If Carlo Kemp can take a major leap, that would change the profile of the defense.
He talked about Ben Mason, who we know put on another like 20-something pounds. All weight gain is apparently good.
All weight gain is good, but getting to 270 is not sufficient.
But if you can literally bench press a Mack truck.
I'm still not buying it.
No?
I buy the two starters. I buy Donovan Jeter, and I buy one of the two freshmen.
What about Chris Hinton? You know, is put on 38 pounds according to MGO blog. He's up to 303, and I think he's. It looks like they're putting him at the nose, not at even three tech. That's at least a preliminary idea.
Well, I mean, he's the guy who, even though Amazigh Smith came in and had spring practice, he's the guy who is the most plug and play of all. I mean, his dad was in the NFL for 10 years. He went to Northwestern.
Yes,
his dad,
correct.
Like both his parents went to Northwestern.
Correct. His brother's going to Stanford.
And his dad does coaching down in the Atlanta area. So there's a lot of football in that brain and in that family.
Yeah, and he's the guy who went down to the Army game and I don't know, it's not the Army game. Anyway, went down to his All-Star game and really showed that he was one of the top defensive tackles in the country. That's a guy who I think you can rely on to be a contributor in year one. The problem is that all defensive tackles who are freshmen, even like five stars, super hyped up guys, really aren't that good. So Hinton would have to defy a lot of history to be a legitimately good player. Now, can he be, you know, the fourth guy in the rotation, like the number four defensive tackle, and can Michigan live with that? Probably. But I buy that over Ben Mason. Ben Mason, maybe next year.
They seem to be pretty high on Ben Mason contributing this year. Maybe it's a situational thing. Maybe it's because he's really strong. They do love Ben Mason.
Ben Mason. They love the idea of Ben Mason. They love his whole chi, and they want him to be able to produce at this new position. And I think he will, but it's going to take another year.
Yeah, the coaches seem noticeably unworried about the defensive line. I don't know. At this point, I'm agnostic. I just don't know. I mean, you're right.
I think they'll be fine against the run. It's just you don't get pass rush from the defensive end.
Is it because they're too small? Is it because, I mean, what's your concern? Because, I mean, Harbaugh says this is the fastest line we've ever had.
So my concern is that last year Carlo Kemp provided absolutely no pass rush.
Tackles almost never provide pass rush in any offense.
It's tough for you to have a really elite defense without having someone who at least pushes the pocket.
That's probably
and,
true.
And Mike Dumonfort was not able to stay on the field because, one, he had that Lisfranc injury, and, two, he was just a terrible run defender. So if you can have Dumonfort on the field consistently, I feel a lot better, because even last year with his injury, he was a pretty good interior pass rusher. And so we can't have something that happens like that happened in the Indiana game, where they just single up your two defensive tackles and double your ends, and then because you can't blitz with it as much as you want because of the situation in your secondary, you can't really get to the quarterback. So it's been kind of a cascade effect that got to Michigan at the end of last year, and part of that is the fact that they didn't have a Mo Hurst or a Ryan Glasgow or a Mike Martin. See, I'm naming a lot of guys who have had interior pass rush for Michigan. Willie Henry's
another.
So like having none of that is a problem.
And he started with Carlo Kemp, so that would be, as you said, it would be a big boon for this defense if he can take a leap forward and be able to provide some of that stuff. Dumonfort being healthy would be a really big part of that, obviously, as well. Behind those guys, and I know we talked a lot about this last week, but we got a little bit more information at our disposal from last week to this week. They were talking about the linebackers, those two spots, the Mike and the Will. And, I mean, he raves about Josh Ross. He was raving about his football knowledge, his football this and whatever. And I think we're all pretty convinced that Josh Ross will be one of the starting guys in the middle. The second guy he named before he then named Jordan Glasgow and Devin Gill and Jordan Anthony, the second guy he named was Cam McGrone. And I think a lot of us feel that if Cam McGrone can be that guy and be the second guy, sure, they can rotate through the five throughout the game if they want to, you know, to spell them a little bit. But if Cam McGrone is that second guy – I think that's a really good thing for this defense.
Yes. Cam Bergeron is the guy you want to come through because he's the guy who's the most like Devin Bush, who has the most upside, who has the highest rankings, who's the guy who, if he does break through into a starting role in year two as a redshirt freshman, that's a really good star profile to have. And I hope that they have an ability to mix some guys in. So I think you might actually see some like passing down substitutions where they put Glasgow out there, because Glasgow's going to be a better cover guy than the other options, and he's a good blitzer. He gives you a lot of versatility there. And then I know they like it, Devin Gill. They played him a lot last year. But in terms of like who can be the best by the time the Ohio State game rolls around, it's probably not Devin Gill.
You know, the rumor, and at this point, as we mentioned a week ago, the rumors and talk, jibber-jabber is pointless.
Well, it's not pointless. It's just you need to take it with
the... Yeah, is that Glasgow is maybe running first at the will, or at least even with Gill at that position. And, I mean, that's the noise I keep hearing. Now, I'm not saying it's good noise or accurate noise or anything else, but it is noise. And, you know, my curiosity is that last year, McGrone didn't play at all. Did he have a snap last year? Which is kind, because you could redshirt him playing four games, and I don't think he got into meatball time or desperation time in the bowl game.
No, but for whatever reason, Bush almost literally never came off the field. Like, even when they were in meatball, like, it was weird to me. Like, they changed the rest of the defense, and it's like, oh, there's the best player on the defense on the field for no reason. But
yeah, and so isn't that, and that's what I'm saying, it's curious.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily about Cam Bergeron, because Jordan Anthony was also available last year, and they didn't put him in.
He had a few snaps, though. But I don't think Bergeron had any. I don't know.
No, he only played, according to the official list, he played some special teams in the Nebraska game, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what was going on there with Bergeron. So, I guess we all liked it when he was recruited. He was a highly rated guy, and we were optimistic about him. Let's see. We don't know at this point. He's a blank slate.
He's a guy who I thought got ranked a lot more highly than he would have otherwise, specifically because of Devin Bush.
Okay.
Like, if you go and you look at what the things people were saying about him, is like, oh, he's a little undersized. He's a little bit light, but he reminds us of this guy who's currently doing very well in college.
And I think that some of the things with the recruiting rankings have tweaked a little bit recently. You know, there were, for years, if you were a 5'8" slot receiver, you were going to be downgraded just because you weren't tall enough. But if you're a real twitchy athlete now, you may get a little bit more of a boost than you used to. Because
sometimes I still think that
there's still I just think I said a little bit.
Like 24/7 is really focused on the NFL draft. So that's the metric that they're really aiming for.
And the linebacker position, I think, is enough. But, I mean, Devin Bush was the number 10 pick, so I think you don't have to be 6'3" to be a 4- or 5-star linebacker anymore. If you're a little bit shorter, you have the requisite athleticism and other things that go along with it, that they're not caring nearly as much about your height and that measurable. Maybe the one position where they don't care about the measurable at the height as they do it as they used to.
I mean, I think slots do kind of have a hard cap, because the slot is probably never going to go in the first round of the draft. So, like, a guy like Giles Jackson, or is it Giles Jackson?
Giles.
A guy like Giles Jackson is going to be a better college player than his ranking around 300th is. Like, that's a guy who runs a sub-4 shuttle and a 4-4 and can play running back and wide receiver competently. And Mike Samer still really complicates my hype process here, because if it wasn't for him, I'd be all in on Jackson, but he's there and he's done well. So I don't know what's going on at the H, but I feel good about it, even though it's two true freshmen.
Yeah, I mean, on the Samer still front, I mean, apparently he still leads and is going to be the starter, at least as of this moment at that spot. And I think he was, 550 in the recruiting rating someplace.
He was out there.
Yeah, I mean, and partly because he's from Massachusetts, and no one pays any attention to Massachusetts, because I guess if you're from Massachusetts, you can't play football.
Well, he didn't do camps.
That's the big part of it.
His level of competition wasn't very good. He didn't have an all-star game. So it's understandable why he was kind of in that. Because you put on his highlight film, and he's running so much faster than everybody else on the field, you're like,
It's hard to tell. But
it's almost like what is
that's the trifecta. Yeah. If you're not going to the camp circuit, so scouts can't see, you know, the writer right. scouts can't get tape on you against comparable, you know, competition. If you're not playing at the highest level of a high school or any state with high level competition, you're not going to get that on there. And then, I mean, just being a slot guy is obviously going to be held against you as well. But he does have the skills. We saw it on the field in the spring game. And they are going to – I think both are going to play. I think you'll see Giles. Yeah. I think you'll see Sane Ristol.
And I think they're both going to be good, but neither one of them was – because for all these various reasons, neither one was considered a particularly good recruit.
Yeah, I think – and my thoughts on star rankings, I think at certain times I will look at them and go, that's really important to see it. Right. And then there are times where – I'm going to take coach's word for it, like a coach's word, and they're scouting a guy like Jack Stewart, you know, comes out of Connecticut. Yeah. I mean, same thing. Didn't want to go to the camp circuit. He plays in Connecticut, so the high-level competition isn't there. But if Ed Warner watches that guy's tape and says, that guy's a really good player, I want him, I kind of want him too. Like, I'm going to take Ed Warner's word for it.
Yeah, and so I mean, I do a whole off-season series about this, where I think the recruiting rankings are valuable, but also that there's other stuff in someone's recruitment that can tell you.
Yeah, you do a good job on that. Those things are interesting.
Yeah, and like I try to pick a sleeper of the year every year, and my hit rate on that is like really good. So like I believe both that, you know, rankings are important, and also if you pay enough attention, you can tell which guys are probably gonna defy those rankings. So
incidentally, in Don Brown's commentary yesterday, two players that he jumped out to mention were. A guy we haven't talked about much is Anthony Solomon, who I know very little about.
I mean, he's a true freshman, Viper.
Yeah, he was asked about freshmen, and he named three guys.
And DJ Turner.
Right. Obviously, he mentions Dax Hill. But so tell us a little about, you've watched the tape of these guys, you've seen them. Tell us about those other two guys.
Well, Turner is a cornerback who had a really kind of weird recruitment where it seemed like he had a lot of good offers, but the ranking sites just weren't that interested. And he's about 6 foot. He's a bigger corner. He's a guy who Michigan pursued very heavily, kind of like a Devin Bush thing where it's clear that they really want this particular guy no matter what his ranking is. So that's a positive, but you kind of want other people to catch on late, I guess, like they did with Khalik Hudson. And then who's the other guy?
Anthony Solomon. I think he only weighs like 190
yes.
or something.
He's a Viper, right?
Solomon is a guy who was originally going to commit to Michigan and then committed to Miami, and then all of a sudden, like really late in the process, like, oh, he's going to flip. And then he flipped. And he's a guy who, as we were talking about previously, I think the recruiting sites haven't yet caught up to, because he's not a safety. He's not a linebacker. And so he gets kind of ranked in kind of this, he's fast. I don't know what he's going to do. And he is like the Viper guy. He's like the heart of what a Viper should be. So, I mean, this is obviously going to be an apprentice year for him, because Hudson is back. And if Hudson goes out, it's going to be Glasgow. But,
and there's also Michael Barrett, who's getting –
I thought
right
Michael
there.
Barrett was on the inside now.
He has been – last I heard, he was Viper and, like, kick returner.
Wow. I mean, I was under the impression that he was now a middle linebacker, because he's, like, 40 pounds heavier than Solomon. He's a big dude.
He's up to, like, 220, I think.
220, 230, I thought. So, I mean, in Michigan, that's a middle linebacker now.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, those guys – Solomon is not going to play a lot this year. He's going to be a developmental guy. But he to hear that – he's impressing off the bat is good for next year. And then Turner, I mean, never say never, especially at cornerback where Michigan has some question marks.
We'll get to what Athlon Sports anonymous coach comments on Michigan football, and we'll get Brian and Craig's takes on what those coaches were saying anonymously about Michigan coming up on the other side of the break. Welcome back inside the NDN studio, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. Brian Cook and Craig Ross are here for the MGO Blog Roundtable. And so Athlon Sports this time of year, every year, and it was published almost exactly at this time yesterday. Athlon Sports puts out anonymous quotes from coaches scouting their opponents. So Big Ten coaches scouting other Big Ten teams.
Can I just give a shout out to Joe Tiller here?
Sure.
Because when Joe Tiller was around, these were awesome. He was the best at being like petty and anonymous at people.
And you knew it was him.
And you knew it was him, and I miss him.
So there might have been a couple in here that you'd enjoy, I think, on like Michigan State and others, but I want to read the Michigan ones to you guys. So the first one is, quote, Shea Patterson helped change the identity of the team.
You can't oversell what his play style did for Michigan, but what will the changes really be on offense? Are they truly going to embrace the spread with Josh Gattis? It's hard to see Jim Harbaugh doing that. Even with the changes, they were still pretty close to that Stanford 22 personnel stuff Harbaugh was doing, has always done.
In the words of George Harrison, I got blisters on my fingers. Yeah, never mind.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
It's good to hear you finally admit it.
So, anyway, no. I mean, Harbaugh hired Gattis saying the offense is yours. Gattis yesterday said, hey, the offense is mine. I don't even talk to Harbaugh about it. I take that at absolutely face value. And in the spring practice, there was nothing to show that wasn't the case. So this is Gattis's offense. There's no fullback. It's a spread offense. And no.
That's true. When they talked about the running back group yesterday, it's like we got five guys and they all said Ben Van Sumeren. So there's no fullback.
Yeah, when I asked them about fullback, the actual word I used fullback a week and change ago when I was with the offensive coaches, and Gattis was very quick to say, as Jay deferred it right to Gattis, and Gattis was very quick to say, we will run two back sets, but we will not have a fullback. And both backs in the two back sets have to be able to do everything. So they have to be able to run the ball, catch the ball, and block. And so they can be called, either guy can be called upon to do if they're in a two back set. Now, I would guess that if they ever wanted to have like a lead blocker for a power run, because it is third and one and they just want to churn a yard, maybe Van Sumeren is the guy. Maybe they bring Mason over to be that guy, just to be the lead blocker. But yeah, they're a two back set at times, but they are running backs. They're tailbacks. They're not fullbacks. But maybe this also goes into what you were saying about Joe Tiller. Maybe this was just from a salty coach that doesn't like Jim, or thinks that Jim is too stubborn to change, or doesn't know.
I mean, possibly. That's just kind of a bog standard talk radio talking point, though. No offense, Ira.
No, it's a very... Well, we
this
don't
is
do
a bog standard. Well, we have Craig here talking poetry.
Yeah, we don't... When it comes to Michigan stuff in particular, we don't do... We actually read the standard stuff and go, and then debunk it or whatever.
Well, I mean, whoever said that didn't watch Michigan spring game. Because you don't put that in the spring and run nothing but it without making that what you're going to do.
Yeah, whoever said that was paying no attention at all.
Right.
I mean, basically, and so it's just wrong.
All right, next.
Maybe it's a coach that doesn't see them till later in the year. They'll get fresh tape and then see what they're doing. The second one, a lot of coaches think they still want to grind you out and don't want to embrace the change. They've done a great job recruiting on offense. They can switch to a full-on spread and score a lot this season. It's not even a major change. It was just as you had to scout and respect that the kid could pull it and run, or just the threat of it.
Yeah, that's accurate. That's a good point, because last year, about halfway through, I was like, Shea Patterson doesn't want to run the ball. And then it turned out that he did want to run the ball and was very effective doing
so.
And was, I mean, critically was able to make the read very consistently. So that's actually a guy who's paying attention. I hope that's not Michigan State. but it probably is.
I don't know who it is, but it's accurate. So whoever said it is paying attention, unlike the first guy.
In other transitions we've seen Michigan go through, whether it was from Lloyd to Rich or Rich to Brady or whatever it might be, this team transitioning from Jim's offense to Gattis's offense, and the recruiting they've done, not just this freshman class to bring in like the slot guys, but the recruiting they've done, it seems like it's a transition that will not, it's not going to be like plugging in, you know, square pegs into round holes.
Well, they accidentally had a spread offense just kind of waiting. So you've got, you know, a slot receivers who are freshmen, but you had recruited them before you brought in Gattis. Mm-hmm. You have a guy who's was an RPO guy at Ole Miss as your quarterback. You have a ton of outside receivers.
You got a backup quarterback who can run, McCaffrey.
That's a good point. You've got a backup running back who is well suited to the spread, who happens to be out for the year, but that was not anybody's fault. And then you have Drew Wilson, who's probably the best pass protecting back Michigan's had since Mike Hart. So it lines up weirdly.
I agree.
Defensively, they're tough. Absolutely one of the best and meanest defenses in college football. There's enough skill and enough buy-in where they can do a lot of different things. If you don't have athleticism, they're going to wear you out. They're high pressure, lots of blitz, and play man coverage almost all the time.
Why is that anonymous?
Yeah. That's exactly what I thought when I read it the first time.
Yeah,
I said, duh.
Joe Tiller would not stand for this.
Did you notice on Don Brown's interview or presser yesterday, Last week, we mentioned, or I mentioned at least briefly, about, well, maybe Michigan should think about a little more zone. And Brian thought, said he'd been thinking about that. I think that was as far as you went.
I mean, I think it's a good idea. I don't think it's going to happen as much as you might want.
Yeah, I mean, and Brown said, nah, if anything, we don't pressure enough. I want to go more the other way.
So, you know,
so I mean.
You know, you can do fire zones or you have a five-man pressure in a zone behind it. Like, right. I just think to have the variety there is good.
Yeah, and but in any event, that's it doesn't sound like becoming a cover two team has one chance in a billion.
No.
For Michigan.
It was never going to happen.
Well, yeah. The thing that he said is, he goes, the one thing that I can tell you is that we're more prepared versatility-wise in coverage. The aggressive nature will never change. In fact, I'd like it to be more.
Yeah.
So if he's creating more versatility, it's, I don't know whether it's adding sprinkling in zone or different ways to read the rub routes and different things to create, to stay in man, but to allow them to be more productive.
Well, I mean,
stopping some of the things that got him at the end of last year.
Last year's defense was not actually all that aggressive from a blitz perspective because they really relied on their ends and Uche. And you know, they were using Bush more as a decoy and a cover guy, and that worked out fine, except for the fact that, you know, they couldn't consistently get pressure with four when those ends got doubled at the end of the year. So more aggressive is more like 2 years ago and not more like last year.
There's two more that are here, and I'm going to read both of them together because they're kind of related. Ohio State has had their number, but that's because they're the only ones who have the talent to go one-on-one against that man coverage. Ohio State was athletic enough to pick and rub and beat them at their game. And then the other one is you have to look at the progress outside of those Ohio State games. They've built really well, and they're in position to keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, it's alarming that Michigan kind of got crossing routed to death against Ohio State when that was clearly what they wanted to do. But the athleticism thing only got exposed when Michigan got down to its third corner against guys who were going to be in the top two rounds of the NFL draft.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
No, but that's, I mean, Ohio State has generally been more talented, and that's why they generally win the game.
Yeah. The it was interesting I've lost my train of thought when I interrupted you. So just go ahead. I forgot what I was going
to
say.
Well, now I was waiting for you to say something, and then I was going to respond to it.
Okay.
So well, now we're...
This is good radio.
It
sorry.
Is. I think so.
This is the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050
not
WTK.
Your typical,
take it online at WTK.com.
Not typical Sports Talk radio.
Yeah, we're even more, less coherent than usual.
What was the second part of the Ohio State thing that they were talking about?
It said, you have to look at the progress outside of those Ohio State games. They've built really well, and they're in position to keep it going.
Yeah, I think that's another good point, is that, like, you know, Michigan State, since Harbaugh has come, you know, they have the fluky punt thing. They had the game when
in the monsoon.
Yeah, with John O'Korn.
Right.
And other than that, they have not really been that competitive with Michigan.
Yeah.
So, and Penn State, well, we've been alternating blowouts against Penn State. So we'll see how it goes this year. But if you look at Penn State's personnel, I'm not particularly afraid of that game. Like, their starting quarterback who transferred, they're going to go with. Was it Tommy Stevens or
Stevens is gone.
He's gone too.
Sean Clifford.
Clifford is the guy they're going to probably go with.
So, like, if you look at their offense, it doesn't look like it's going to be on the level it's been.
And looks, and they say more pro style, using the air quotes. I don't know even that what that means.
Yeah, and like, you know, the Ricky Rain guy felt like last
year. That's going to be a defensive, a really good defensive team that has offensive question marks all over the place. I mean, they lost Barkley, and Sanders wasn't Barkley, but he was pretty good. Sanders is now gone. They had Juwan Johnson, but now he's gone. The receiver output since Gattis has left has dropped off a lot. I know that out of 11 players in the transfer portal, a lot of them probably maybe backups, but their depth has to be impacted by having 11 guys. I think it was a net loss of like 10 players through the transfer portal.
Well, also, you know, I have this concept of the Wile E. Coyote year, where your really important guy leaves, and then things are kind of okay the next year, and then the next year you look down. And this feels like a Wile E. Coyote year, because Ricky Rain is still the offensive coordinator there, doesn't really have much of a track record. Last year was just kind of going through the same Moorhead motions without the verve. Yeah. Like, they were doing that, like, Barkley cat thing in the game last year, when it was like, that worked once. It worked the first time they did it. It was a brilliant Moorhead thing. It didn't work the rest of that game. And then to bring it back, as if anyone's going to be surprised, to me, that's a big danger sign from your offensive coordinator.
So watch out for the Acme Anvil Company.
Well, yeah, and then you lose your starting quarterback, who was pretty much the be-all and end-all of that offense last year. You have uncertainty at the position going forward. I would not be surprised to see Penn State's defense take a tumble. Offense.
Yeah, I agree on that.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm regaining my train of thought. Was on the Brown interview was interesting because he said, I thought we were pretty good last year except for 38 minutes. And he said the first 19 minutes of the Notre Dame game, we were bad as a defense. And the last 19 minutes of the Ohio State game, we were bad as a defense.
We were bad in the first half of the Ohio State game, too.
I think I agree with you. I think he oversold it a bit on yes, it's true, Notre Dame didn't do anything after they got ahead, but they sort of played a fairly conservative game after they got ahead.
Honestly, I felt like the Notre Dame game was just their quarterback, whose name I'm blanking on.
Me too, because they're playing Wimbush this year.
Wimbush, yeah. Just getting super lucky on a bunch of deep throws where he just doesn't hit those, and then when they couldn't do that, they couldn't do anything.
And one got hit over the backup safety after
go through Hawkins.
I'm not trying to refresh memories on that.
Thanks for that.
So I want to read you, I'm not going to read all the anonymous quotes about the other opponents or the rivals or whatnot, but I want to read the first one about Michigan State in particular, just to get your take on it. This is a program that's never as bad as their record. That being said, the change in the division is starting to show, and they can't dominate when the big three are clicking like they have been.
That's true. And this year is like, they really need something to happen this year, because if you look at their recruiting, it's horrendous. They have like three top 500 guys. They're getting killed in state because of Blackwell. They're getting killed in Ohio because of Luke Fickle in Kentucky. Like, the guys that they've gone and got are drying up.
I mean, do you think it's fair to say that Ohio State was helping Michigan State recruit with guys that maybe they didn't really want, or they were sort of on the edge of wanting and decided, okay, this guy is pretty good, I don't want him at Michigan, or so let's flip him over to Michigan State?
It's possible.
I mean, it's certainly, there's some noise out there.
I think the biggest thing to look at, because my wife was just having this conversation with a Sparty in her office, and he took a screenshot of like the last 10 years and be like, yeah, look at this. And I was like, well, crop it down just to the last three, and Michigan's won two of those three. But I then said,
even the last five, who's on the roster right now?
Well, right. And the real rebuttal is, okay, so Michigan State built to this level, which is their best run since the 60s, against the worst decade Michigan's had since LBJ was president, or maybe before that.
Well, so
that's really what it comes from.
You know, the thing about Michigan State the last 4 or 5 years is that they had the 3-9 year. And if you go look at the advanced stats, they were played more like a 500 team. And then they had a 9-3 year immediately after that. And if you go look at the advanced stats, they played more like a 500 team.
So like last year, 7-16.
So they've been basically a 500 team for the last 4 years. And that's kind of Michigan State's historical baseline. Yeah. And so the problem is that, like, okay, so your offense was 118th in the country. What are you going to do to go fix that? Are you going to go get Josh Gattish? No, you're going to pull the Brady Hoke, and everybody switches positions that they're coaching at.
Yeah,
what is that?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they're just moving the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah.
On the offensive side. On the defensive side, they do have some guys.
Yeah.
But after this year, those guys are gone, and they're sitting, I mean, if you believe in recruiting ratings, I think number 53 when I looked last week, which is right about the bottom of the Big Ten. So they're recruiting, and they didn't recruit great last year.
They had two guys from Belleville and not much else.
Yeah, and they lost, obviously. They've lost a lot of guys. And so that program, after this year, I don't know. It's looking
even this year, it looked like another 500 team that
Well,
goes to
they'll play D. They're going to play D because Willekes can play and Bocci can play. And
defense is going to be put. And we've seen this before here. That defense is going to be put in some really interesting positions because of that offense. And maybe because of their hideous uniforms,
too. Didn't they lose a game to Nebraska 6-3 last year or something?
Something like that.
Remember when we played Nebraska, what their defense seemed like? It seemed like it was not even – like we just ran down G twice in a row and we got a touchdown out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we did that three times.
Well, if you blink, you might have scored Nebraska again in that game. That was a phenomenal one offensively.
Yeah, it was mysterious because after our Nebraska game, I thought those were the worst linebackers I'd ever seen in the Big Ten. Yeah. And then against Michigan State, they looked pretty good. So I don't know what was going on.
I'm guessing that's more about who they were playing on the other side. All right, real quickly, I'm going to read two that are related from Ohio State from the anonymous coaches from Athlon Sports. No one expects this team to take a step back because Urban Meyer left. They showed how good they can be without him. Expect that level of execution from the three-game suspension period. They weren't a different team in terms of what they called. They called the exact same stuff later on, but they had energy. Ryan Day was already evolving the play calling before he even got the head job. And then they said they're not going to miss a beat after Urban. That's why they hired the guy already in the program.
I mean, that's what you can say, but when last time Ohio State had an opening and it was like, oh, here's a guy with two national championships who's like 40. Like, that was a bad thing. That was not good. And this time around, it's like, all right, you hired this guy. And he went out and he got, for his defensive coordinator, a 70-year-old guy who had been demoted at Michigan. And then an NFL position coach from the 49ers who coached defensive backs for a team that, when you go do the fancy stats for the NFL, was like close to dead last in the league for the last 3 years. I think they made a mistake.
Yeah, and the defensive front should be really good again. And yeah. Larry Johnson, and for that matter, Greg Maddon's a good defensive line coach. I'm not gonna shortchange him on that. But
you don't need a defensive line coach when you got Larry Johnson.
Right, exactly. So the defensive line, they're gonna be really good up front, but their linebackers have a lot of question marks. Their secondary wasn't that good last year. They had a lot of question marks. And so then you bring in, as you said, what you were just talking about. I'm curious about their defense this year. And for that matter, their offense, too, because there was the video from when Big Ten Network was there and Fields couldn't even finish a handoff on one of the plays that they showed.
Well, they got problems at quarterback. I mean,
they got all their marbles in Fields.
And one guy, yeah. Really, because after Fields, they don't have anything that I know about, at least. I don't know if you know.
They have a Kentucky transfer named Gunnar Hope.
Yeah.
Great. So Fields, you know, wasn't good enough to win the job at Georgia. That doesn't mean he isn't a good player or can't run that offense well, but that's a question. And if Fields gets hurt, forget it. There.
So if he's a throw first in that offense last year, obviously they were a throw first last year. If he's a run first guy,
run first.
And which he is. Doesn't that also change the dynamic of that offense? Because when it's a run-first offense,
it doesn't really mesh with what Day wants to do.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't want to say that this is happening because it's never happened. But like, it does feel like this is a mistake and this is something that might be a turning point.
Wouldn't mind it being a mistake. 734-998-1050. You can email studio@wtk.com. You can tweet us at Michigan Insider as we go to the break. Welcome back. Amber Goblog Roundtable here on Sports Talk 1050. WTK The Ticket online at WTK.com. They might be listening now. I said this at the beginning of the show. I just want to steal a moment. I'm pretty confident my parents are not listening at 6:08 this morning, but they might be listening at 9:54. Today is my parents' 48th wedding anniversary. Wow. So how about that? 48 years for my parents.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
So happy anniversary to Mom and Dad. We'll see you later for anniversary dinner. Then they're off. They're taking my daughter Grace to New York. Take her to see Frozen on Broadway. They're going to take her to the American Girl store. All the things that grandparents want to do with the grandkid. A buggy ride through Central Park.
I think you just invented something that would be a millionaire idea. You just have a horse-sized pug.
I didn't mean puggy. Yeah,
that,
buggy
like ride. Carries around.
People would go nuts. It would be amazing.
A couple of things. I wonder what you guys think about on Gattis's presser yesterday. He said that the deepest position on his offense right now is running back. And I got a thing or a bad thing.
You only need one running back.
Well, I know, but he
I would say, you know, I guess it's all depends on how you're viewing deep, right? So they're talking about the three main guys that we all talk about, right? He talks about True Wilson, Zach Charbonnet, and Christian Turner. He then also talked about Hassan Haskins having a really good camp, and they talk about Ben Van Sumeren. So there's five guys for the one, and occasionally two, because they could do two backs in the backfield next to the quarterback. But how do you view depth? Because I almost look at maybe the offensive line could be deepest because of how many bodies they have there. They haven't had numbers like that in a long time. The quarterback room has four guys. Now, Cade's, as Ben McDaniel said, he had a great camp or a great spring for a early, so he qualified it. But it is one of the best quarterback rooms in America. It's super deep. And if you compare that depth compared to, say, we talked in the last segment of against Ohio State, I don't know, there's a lot of depth on the offense in a lot of spots. If Gattis is happy with the running back room, I think that's a great thing for the team.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that feels like a kind of a pump-up thing where you're just saying something for the benefit of the team, which is something that happens pretty frequently. Because, like, if Ben Van Sumer, and no offense, is taking carries, like, it doesn't feel good to me. And same with Hassan Haskins, who hasn't...
Unless it's niche carries, right?
Right, yeah. Like, it's short yardage or whatever, fine. But, like, realistically, they have two guys who have been on campus and can be expected to pass protect, and then they have a really promising freshman who missed all of spring, and we have no idea what it's like when he sets up to pass protect and whether he's going to be in a great spot. So it's not the worst situation, you know, but it's something, and I believe in Tre Wilson. Like, everybody's expecting Tre Wilson to get passed, and I'm just like, pass protection is probably the most important trait you can have for a running back. Like, in modern football, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, last year when he got the opportunity to run the ball, he ran 5.9 yards a carry. And I thought he had better vision than Caron Higdon. Now, he's not the athlete Caron Higdon is, but if you block him the yards, he's going to get you the yards. And I feel that's a good trait with this offensive line.
I agree with that. I agree with the Tre Wilson commentary. The other interesting thing about Gattis that Gattis said was that he felt McCune was one of the top two players they had on offense in the spring, and that he felt that he and Eubanks formed the best tight end tandem in the country. Again, does that feel like puffery, or is this something that, you know?
I mean, maybe a little bit, but he did have some good tight ends last year too that he was working with.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's never seen good tight ends.
He had good tight ends at Penn State.
Yeah. So when I graded McCune's blocking last year, it was one of two things. It's one, he completely blew a block because they gave him a whole new offense halfway through the season and expected him to be the most important player in implementing that offense. And two, when he actually got his hat on a guy, it went well. So if he can just cut out the first stuff, and he did as the season went along, mm-hmm. and just be the guy who's a really consistent blocker, and then add a little bit of receiving.
So on the hands thing,
flashiest guy.
Yeah. So on the hands part, on the receiving part, apparently his biggest project in the offseason, besides shedding weight and then building it back up, he's down like 5 pounds, but it's down 10 to build up with some muscle.
All weight gain and loss is good.
Correct. So they were really raving about him in particular with the weight loss and weight gain. The other part is that he spent a lot of time working on hand placement and different things to be better at catching the football. And if he does that, that obviously will elevate his game as compared to last year.
Well, you know, coming out of high school, he had the best spark score for a tight end that year. And that was a reason to be optimistic about him. We haven't really seen that translate to the field. And part of that is just the fact that they had Zach Gentry on the roster. So, like, if you're going to run a guy down the seam, well, it's going to be the 6'8 guy. So he's going to have an opportunity this year. I think he's going to play well.
The other interesting commentary to me was that at right tackle, we have two starters in Stuber and Mayfield. I think that implies that still is an ongoing battle that's close.
I can confirm that with my talk with Jim Harbaugh that'll air on next week's Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. It's like Stuber has a really good practice one day, has the better practice one day, and then Mayfield the next day. And it's not that one guy's a bad one per se, but they meet, and it's a great way to wrap things up, every night at 10 o'clock. After they've been in the office since, you know, 5-6 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. every night at 10 o'clock, the coaches go to the coaches conference room, mm-hmm. sit on the table, and they talk depth chart every day, every night at 10 o'clock. And so some of those positions, I think we pretty know exactly, like quarterback, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. But right tackle, it could be that to the point where it's an or, because it's this day it might be Stuber, and then the next night at 10 o'clock they might be like, you know what, Mayfield was better today. He's the guy. And so it's still an either or at this moment, but we're one fully padded practice in. So it's still really, really,
really
early to tell.
Too early to tell, but I mean, it looks pretty clear that there are six offensive linemen of the four established guys, and then Stuber and Mayfield at right tackle.
And I would say Spinellis is a guy they'll be comfortable with putting as well.
Correct.
I think they're comfortable with Spinellis inside.
Correct. Real quickly before we get out of here, Jake in Ann Arbor, send us home, Jake.
I am pumped out. We are just 23 awesome days till the Michigan football season. I remember counting down from 200, and then we're just 23 awesome days till the Michigan football season. Almost 2 weeks till game week. One game, one play, one moment at a time. I'll hang up and listen. Go blue, win or lose. I'll hang up and listen. Go blue.
Thank you, Jake. Thanks to Chris Creighton for calling in this morning. Also, Dr. Ava Feldman. Thanks to the top dog of the week for stopping by. As always, Wendy from the Humane Society of Huron Valley. And, of course, our guys here, Brian Cook, Craig Ross. Thanks for stopping by. And my man, Miz, on the other side of the break.
Miz.
Better than us!
No!